Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Nobody is Shiftier, because in fact, nobody is shiftier than the Shifty Hippo. This is the show where we go through, we're going to drink some beers, abundance of beer breaks today. And, you know, most people in my position, they like to write things down. They're going to talk about this, followed by this, followed by this. They have structure, right? That's typically what makes a good show. I used to do that. And then really towards the end of the NFL season, I found myself trying to write stuff down and I'm like, I'm not going to forget any of this. So I've kind of just been going off the top of my head, and obviously probably means I'm going to miss some stuff here and there. You're probably better off listening to a show that has this said structure. It's going to sound like it has a format to it. Maybe they're not drinking a beer while they're doing the show, but let's be honest. Is their stuff any better? Doubtful. So, guys, we're going to obviously talk about the divisional round of the NFL weekend that, well, at this point, it's actually almost conference championship weekend. I am recording this on Friday, so we are 2 days out from the conference championships. I thought I was going to get to doing all sorts of episodes this week, and I'll be full-blown honest with you guys. I have not once in my life had a vacation where I'm not bored as shit by, like, 4 days in. I'm typically like dying to get back to work because I just get so bored at home. Has not been the case. And by that, I haven't been like busy doing a bunch of shit. Each Monday and Tuesday of the 2 weeks I've been off here, kind of had the pleasure of going out with my girlfriend, Michelle. We got to celebrate my birthday here earlier this week. We went out for drinks with some of my friends and then to my favorite restaurant, Chili's. Chili's, you're welcome to be a sponsor anytime you'd like to be, by the way. I think that would be a great beneficial meeting for both us and you. And additionally, Tuesday for my actual birthday, really didn't do a whole lot, but we were able to hang out for a little while. I went to Michelle's volleyball game at night. It was a good time. And it was cool to be able to go out. But I mean, those 4 days, just the Mondays and Tuesdays that she's been off, it's the only times I've been out of the house. That's it. Yesterday, my one of my best friends, Tim, stopped by for about an hour. We got to hang out for a little bit. That's been about it. I've been upstairs playing NBA 2K. I'm sorry. It's all I've been doing. Other than obviously when the games are on, I've been watching the games. And at night, I've been watching mostly Laker games on my phone, but occasionally some other games too. I find myself really enjoying watching the Cavs. Anybody else really having a good time with the Cavs this year? I find them to be one of the funnest teams to watch. Donovan Mitchell's obviously been putting on a show. I mean, I doubt he's going to get anything as far as like MVP votes, just considering some of the guys that are out there. And while I got this on the top of my mind, if Nikola Jokic went to third straight MVP, I'm going to be pissed. Like, I'm at this point with this dude where I'm looking at it and I'm like, yes, I get it. Realistically, from a numbers perspective, and even from a regular season winning perspective, and I understand it's a regular season award, Denver has been an upper echelon team, and he's been putting up just gaudy numbers, shit that you don't really ever see. He's going to be one of the all-time triple-double leaders in the history of the NBA. But does the dude really make Denver better than anybody else really even out West? Because even though the West is kind of down this year and I'm looking through and like, I mean, Luka Doncic is playing this amazing brand of basketball. I haven't seen anything quite like it. The thing that gets me with Luka the most, and I will tell this to anybody that asks me anything about Luka, he's not particularly athletic. He's not faster than anybody. He's got a big body, but I don't think he's stronger than anybody. There's a whole lot of Luka's game that is predicated on just the fact that he is that dude with that touch. And to be honest, it's not my favorite kind of game to watch. Like, I don't love watching Luka play because I'm not getting the excitement. I'm not getting a guy that's blowing by people. I'm not getting these hard-ass dunks. Like, I mean, do you remember? I mean, even LeBron still can do it to an extent where when he drives the lane and just throws it down and it shakes the rim and you hear it, like, that's how hard he dunks the ball. You hear the fucking net. I mean, I love that. Russell Westbrook had a lot of that back when he was actually like a positive contributor, even though I know he's having a better year this year, but I mean, it's still let's be real. God, I for $47 million, we could do so much more there in LA. But John Morant, maybe the funnest player to watch right now in the league. I mean, John Morant is a blast, and it's just this gift of all sorts of athleticism. The dude is shorter than everybody else on the court, yet he soars above all of them for his dunks, for his layups. He's got this amazing finishing touch around the rim, similar to that of like Kyrie Irving's, but I feel like it's even more fun because it's higher. You know what I mean? He's got the elevation that is more than Kyrie ever really got. I mean, John Morant's a blast to watch. You're not getting that with Luka, but you can't not notice that every night he is the Dallas Mavericks. It's the Dallas Lukas. It's incredible. So, I mean, I think that he would probably be my nod for who deserves to be the MVP this year, but I feel like it's going to end up being this thing where people start looking at the records and the Mavericks are a 500 team, even though at one point they were a little ways better than that. They've been on a little bit of a slump here lately, but it's going to be okay. Well, I mean, Boston's been phenomenal. Jason Tatum's their best player. He looks even better than last year. It's going to be Jason Tatum, right? And then out west, it's going to be Nikola Jokic, who's, I'm sure, I haven't even looked at his stats, to be honest with you. I'm just going to assume he's averaging a triple-double. Like, let's be honest. I mean, that's kind of the dude's game. He just always has 31 points, 16 rebounds, and 11 assists. That's just kind of his game. It's also kind of Luka's. But I feel like Luka's is more in the superstar medium than Jokic's, if you know what I mean. And I think we're going to look back at Jokic and we're going to see all these MVP awards and we're going to be like, yeah, but was he really that great? Because, I mean, you know how it is where you look back in time and you see certain players and you immediately, especially if you didn't really get to watch them that much, you immediately go, oh, wow, this person won all these awards back in these 3 years. I mean, a lot of people, if you see that Hakeem Olajuwon won two finals MVPs back to back, you're like, oh, wow. Now, granted, he's probably not the best example because I really actually think Hakeem Olajuwon is a phenomenal basketball player, like beyond what most even really diehard NBA guys would say, because a lot of those guys will lean towards Shaq or even Ewing. And I'm like, nah, 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 nah. And I understand if you want to make the Shaq argument. I mean, there was almost nobody more dominant. I mean, Wilt and Shaq were the two most dominant players that have ever played the game of basketball. But Hakeem did things that nobody else in this league has ever done in the post. And that in of itself is just the coolest fucking thing to me. So I appreciate those awards. But then people that were there at the time will typically tell you, well, it's because Jordan wasn't there. And it's true. That's when Jordan had gone off to play baseball. So a lot of people look at those two awards from that time and don't think of it the same way that somebody my age necessarily would go and look and say, ooh, wow, Hakeem, he really took over the league these 2 years. Anybody that was there would just tell you, well, Michael wasn't there. So, and by the way, I think that would have been a fun finals matchup to see. Those Chicago Bulls against those Houston Rockets, I think that would have been pretty cool. Probably still lean towards MJ, though, let's be honest. I think we're going to look back at Jokic as our time, and there's going to be the next generation of kids that looks back at these stats, and they see Jokic, and they're going to be like, wow, he was really amazing, huh? And we're going to be like, he was like always the seventh best player in the league. I mean, it's going to be really deflating to some kid who just sees the stats and just their mind is blown. And they're like, wow, look at how good he was. Like, I remember the first one that I did that with was after Will Chamberlain, because obviously as soon as I started looking back at anything, because I've gone back, man, I've watched full games from back in the 1950s and shit. I was watching black and white games when there were less than 8 teams in the NBA. Like, I've done way too much research into the history of basketball. But one of the first ones that got me is I looked and saw that Bob Pettit, who was a power forward for Atlanta, he averaged over 26 points a game. And I'm looking at how few players have done that over the course of their career. And I'm like, wow, he must have been really something. And yeah, he was, but it was also in an era where there wasn't a lot of people that were really his size even. and you look at what he did, and then it's like, oh, well, yeah, he was just kind of a lesser Wilt. Like, it was the poor man's Wilt. He was Wilt Zero. It was, you know, I mean, and not to say that he wasn't good, but it was kind of like, oh, that's why I had never heard of him until I just started randomly researching stats. That makes more sense. And I think that's how we're going to look back at Nikola Jokic. I feel like anybody that's a huge Bob Pettit fan is probably coming after me, and I swear I don't mean that as any disrespect to Bob Pettit. He was a great player. It's just like, oh, I get it. Like, he was the only guy on his team, really, for the most part back then, too. So it's like everything's just going into Bob, and Bob's going to, of course, he's going to average 26 a game. He's bigger than you, and he has a decent finishing touch. Kind of the same with Wilt, but I mean, at least Wilt really made it count. there was a stat the other day. Damian Lillard had scored 60 a few nights back. They have up on the screen players that have scored 60 points in a game and how many times they've done it. And, you know, it's Dame with this amount. And I saw MJ and Kobe on the list, and it's all single digits. And then it's got Wilt on the same list. Oh, yeah, he did it 32 times. It's like, oh, yeah, that's right, because he didn't put to waste any of that talent, even though he did play in an era where people weren't his size. He was able to just dominate people, but he made the most of that shit. I mean, he legitimately just called for the ball every time. It's like, I got this. And, yeah, if you ever watch his game, I mean, that's a lot of what it was. Will get down low, and whether it even be post up or he just face up, and he would just make either a move to the basket, or one thing that a lot of people don't realize with Wilt, he could really pass out too. Like, if he had somebody open, he just tossed the rock over. He was averaging a ton of assists before assists were actually measured. So you won't really ever find a good assist number for Wilt Chamberlain, because when they started tracking assists, it was towards the end of his career, and I think he averaged like 4. And that wasn't really the way that Wilt played in the early 60s. But I digress. I feel like I'm getting way too off topic here. I just felt like mentioning, I really don't want to see Jokic win another MVP, because I feel like it's going to disappoint a lot of children of another generation. I think we need to give it to somebody that's a realistic star that's making an impact in the game beyond being just a top 10 player in the league. I think we need to see it be Luka Doncic. I think we need to see... hell, if it's Giannis again, I mean, I'd be fine with that. Even if it is Jason Tatum, I mean, I don't think that Jason Tatum's the best player in the NBA, but I understand that if you're going to do the record thing, I just hope that if you do it this year, you don't give a third one to Jokic and you look towards Tatum. I feel like Tatum would probably be the direction to go if you're going to just do it based on record. Yeah, give it to A, kind of the team that we've all noticed this year is better than everybody else. And additionally, I mean, Jason Tatum, that's one of those guys that can take over a game and actually go like win a championship. I know he hasn't done it yet, but I mean, he took the Warriors to 6 games in the finals last year. I haven't seen Jokic in a finals yet. Just saying. Yeah, I don't feel like I ever will, honestly, like unless Denver decides like they're going to bring in like another guy like Tatum to also kind of be the guy. And then maybe have Jokic as your really awesome number two guy. I think that's probably the way to do it. You can call it a 1 and a 1A. That's fine. That's what I like to think the Lakers are doing with LeBron and AD. I mean, you can see it when AD's off the court, LeBron takes over the game and says, fuck it, I'm scoring 40 tonight. When AD's in there, LeBron's like, hey, AD, you want this ball? I'm 38 years old, man. I don't want to shoot it every time. I don't want to have to keep making moves to the rim. Like, that's why the older that LeBron's gotten, the more he just settles for jump shots. And granted, his shooting touch has gotten a lot better over the years. But LeBron doesn't want to push to the rim anymore. Like, he can. And when he has to, he will. He doesn't want to go through all that every time, especially when it's like every possession. Where 10 years ago, when he was 28 years old, that's how he had to score. He just had to keep getting to the rim. And if he didn't, it wasn't going to go great. He would occasionally get hot from the field and start hitting jumpers everywhere. But I mean, it was not at the percentage that he can do it at now. I think that's probably about enough basketball talk for the day. I got more. I could definitely talk about the Lakers a little bit more. I've been watching their game specifically as just a huge LeBron zealot that I've always been. I could dive into what I think the trade for Rui Hachimura does for the team, AD being back from injury. I'll tell you what, we'll do it a little bit here. All right, we'll take a little beer break. We'll talk a little Lakers, and then we're going to move on. So if you like Lakers coverage, stick around. If not, just fast forward like 5 minutes. So we're going to start with AD coming back. Obviously, it was against the Spurs. So you kind of have to win that game. The Spurs are really not a very good team. And, I mean, the Spurs played it super close, had leads in a lot of the game for the first three quarters. And then in the fourth quarter, the Lakers took over to an extent. It was nice to see AD back on the floor. I heard he was going to have a minutes restriction, and I'm sitting there that as I'm watching the game, I'm like, so what's the minutes cap on this dude? Because I feel like he played a lot of minutes, and I don't have it in front of me, but I'm telling you, he played more than 30 minutes. He didn't start the game. He was out there most of the game. So I don't know what that minutes restriction was supposed to be, but I'm pretty sure he far exceeded it. And I'm not really a fan of that because, yes, you won his first game back in the first game that he got Hachimura on the court. Yeah, of course, you want these guys to be out there in a winning effort against a poor team. You don't want them to lose against a bad team. But at the same time, okay, let's say you drop this game to the Spurs. Well, I mean, shit, instead of three games from the four seed, you're four games down from the four seed. It's not the end of the world. I would have preferred that you don't play AD that much and potentially get him hurt in a way where he's going to miss the next 14 games again, and then we're going to be screwed for a little while longer. Like, I know it's getting better because Lonnie Walker's coming back from injury and Austin Reeves is making his way back from injury. And I know those names are names that put fear in anybody's eyes, but look, they're both two of the best three-point shooters that the Lakers have, and they need that desperately right now. The two things that I've noticed over the last month of basketball that I've been watching from the Lakers' perspective, they suck at rebounding and they suck at three-point shooting. Like, if LeBron's not hitting from deep, you'll get a couple from Schroeder, maybe one from Beverly. That's been about it. And that's been terrible. It's nothing against Trent Brown. I think he's fine. He deserves that. He deserves to have a role, but that role should be pretty minimal. Obviously, they're not really comfortable playing Scottie Pippen Jr. yet in any time of realistic role, unless it's end of game scenario where, you know, the game's already over. I don't really know what his 3-point ability is, but I'm assuming it's not that great. Max Christie, I hear, has pretty solid 3-point ability, but I have yet to really see him in any big time minutes. I'm assuming that's probably because he's like 19 years old and he's built very small, slender. So I got a feeling that he's probably just not built for the rest of the game, but I do hear he has a good shooting touch from, you know, whatever I've heard throughout the NBA tracks of information. But as I look at this, I mean, Hachimura, that adds a forward that provides some level of rebounding. He gets, typically speaking, about 6 rebounds a game. Fine with me, because that's 6 more rebounds we just didn't have. We traded Kendrick Nunn for him, who I think was coming up with about 1 rebound a game. So I will take the +5 in rebounding there. It obviously adds a little bit of size on defense as well, which I think is big. Now, the biggest key here, I think that Anthony Davis really has to sit his ass in the paint, specifically on defense, because we've been getting killed on the offensive boards. Like, we had a game against Memphis that somehow we won by Dennis Schroeder making a miracle. And if not for that, that would have been a loss, and you would have looked at it and just, you could have summarized the entire game within the rebounding differential, specifically how many offensive rebounds Memphis had, because I always try to mess up his name. Steven Adams. I always go to call him Samuel, like the beer. I don't know why I always do that. I think it's because he just looks like a pirate. Steven Adams was just rebounding everything. Shot was missed. It was Steven Adams' ball. He must have had, I know this is going to sound unrealistic, but I think he had 74 rebounds. Like, it was ridiculous. And again, with the 3-point shooting, I think that that's huge, getting back Lonnie Walker and Austin Reeves. But additionally, Hachimura's somebody that shoots over 33% from downtown. I know, I think it was last year, he put up a little over 40, which that would be huge. So we'll see. I still don't think that the Lakers are a championship contending type team, But I do think that this makes them more competitive. And I think that when LeBron's in takeover mode and if AD's healthy, I think they can do something in the playoffs. It just depends on who their first round matchup would be, if they can even get there. And that's its whole conversation in of itself. I do think Anthony Davis, man, we gotta do something to be able to keep the guy healthy. Like, I don't know what. I don't really have a game plan per se, but like, end of the third quarter, he hucks up a half court shot, lands on somebody's foot, rolls his ankle, and I'm sitting there like, okay, well, there's the next month. No AD. He came back in the game. He was fine, but like, I don't like that. I don't want to have to worry about him every time he's on the court. And I think the only way to do that is you give him a little bit less minutes and you make his job more specific. It needs to be, okay, AD, you're here. This is what you're doing. It needs to be interior defense and interior offense. I don't want to see AD. Now, it's fine if he posts up and does a turnaround jumper. That's I get it. That's cool. I don't want AD sprinting all over the court. That's the kind of stuff that gets you hurt. And I think that I know it sucks to tell somebody this, especially when they're a player as great as he is. But, dude, you're going to get hurt if you just keep playing all out on every play. I need you to take like 20% off. Like you're inside. You're now Chris Birdman Anderson. You live in the paint. That's where you live. We need your rebounding. We need your rebounding and your interior defense. Because guess what? If he's staying inside, then that keeps some of the potential perimeter defenders from having to go inside. Because AD, make no mistake about it, when he came out of college, the first thing that everybody noticed was, holy shit, that dude can play defense. Like rim protector savant. Be that. It's, don't come out to the perimeter. Just don't do it. I don't care. Let's play zone. AD zone, the paint. Just the whole paint. We can play man everywhere else if we want. AD, you cover the paint. All right. Another sip of the beer. We're going to move on to football. All right, guys. So the divisional round obviously kicked off with the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs won the game 27-20. Big story coming out of this, obviously, is Patrick Mahomes' high ankle sprain. And that sucked. I will tell you guys a brief story here. As I was getting ready for this game, all I wanted was to go watch Patrick Mahomes play football. Because to me, Patrick Mahomes is the best thing I've ever seen play quarterback in the NFL throughout the course of my life. I would say that some of the other guys that I would have on that list, specifically one that goes back a little ways to make some others happy, is Dan Marino. But just as far as guys that have that arm to where every time they throw it, I'm like, oh yeah, that's going to be something. Andrew Luck had a little bit of that. Aaron Rodgers had a little bit of that. And to an extent, even you could say the same thing with Josh Allen, but Josh Allen is so reckless with it. I actually don't trust him throwing the ball as much. I guess Peyton Manning had a little bit of that. He didn't have quite the arm power that those other guys I mentioned have, but I mean, Peyton can shoot the ball downfield pretty well too. But for some reason, I never really got behind Peyton all that much. I think it was just because of the postseason mishaps. I never really got into him. I was like, he's just going to throw three picks to Ty Law every time. And he's going to face Ty Law every time. That just happens. Ty Law is always in the playoffs. So that's where it ends for you. Well, as I'm getting ready for Patrick Mahomes to play, I get a phone call from, I'm not going to say who, but I got a call from somebody very important to me with some very bad medical news. Very deflating. And while I'm on the phone with him, I get a text from Michelle that somebody in her life had gone through something medically as well. So the mood is totally shot. And Michelle comes home. She's not in a very good mood. And I watch Chad Henne take the Chiefs down the field 98 yards for a touchdown. Now, believe me, it made me happy because Chad Henne keeping that game in there, keeping that drive alive, keeping things going. Well, that means better chance that the Chiefs move forward. And the better the chance the Chiefs move forward, the better chance I get to see Mahomes next week. Very deflating Saturday for me. still get to watch the Chiefs pull it out. Got to watch Mahomes still throw a jump pass for a touchdown that even on the bum ankle, like it's still something you don't see from most quarterbacks. It was so cool. And I mean, all credit to Jacksonville for being able to hang in that game. All credit to them for being able to win out their last five games of the regular season and take that 27-point deficit against the Chargers and just make it disappear. All the credit to those guys in the world, but Saturday was the day of get rid of the teams that I don't want in my conference championship fucking on my conference championship. I don't want to see Jacksonville in the conference championship because realistically, they got no shot. I don't want to see the Giants in the conference championship because realistically, they have no shot. Get them out of here now so I don't have to deal with them next week sitting here going, oh, well, I don't know. I got to talk about this game. No, I don't want to talk about those games. Could you imagine right now if it was the Jags and Bengals? And if it was the Giants and Niners, oh, could you imagine having to watch the Giants and Niners? That'd be terrible. That actually wouldn't even be a fun game to watch. The Jags-Bengals, sure, you can put a little bit of pretty on it just because Trevor Lawrence throws a really nice ball. But I don't want to watch either of those games. We got perfect matchups here. So it was nice to see Kansas City pull out the win there. It wasn't as comfortable as expected, but that was... I mean, it still was pretty comfortable. I mean, Jacksonville gets that field goal at the end just to ruin the spread. I'm sure that many out there are feeling the same way. And then they kick an onside kick that they don't get, and that is game. So it wasn't, you know, super contentious, but it was enough to hang in there. And good for them for that, but Kansas City does move on, obviously, with the story being how is Patrick Mahomes going to fare going forward. Moving to the second game of last week, we had the New York Giants at the Philadelphia Eagles. Eagles won this one 38-7. So this one pretty much from the onset was already over. For the most part here, Daniel Jones, look, he is better than I thought he was 1 year ago. It's about all I'm going to give him. I don't think that there's anything specifically great about what the Giants have. I don't think that their roster is built in a way that it's going to be able to contend right away. I think that this was a team that was able to get through in a weakened NFC where even though the top of the conference is still very good with the two teams that are left, but you look towards what's left, nobody really felt that great about Minnesota this year. It's not like Seattle was this great playoff team. Tampa, I mean, they didn't even go 500. They won their division to get in. Honestly, the Lions might be the third best team in the NFC, if we're being honest. It might be these two teams with Philly and San Francisco and Detroit. And Detroit just didn't figure it out for 9 weeks. But I look back at this NFC playoffs and it's like, yeah. And you know how every year there's a lot of turnover for the teams that made the playoffs the year before and then teams that don't the next year? I mean, I got to think the Giants are one of those teams. I mean, they're about to have to put themselves in a position to give Daniel Jones a contract because he did something, I guess. I mean, if you think 3,200 yards in an NFL where everybody's throwing for 4,000 is that great? Sure, go for it. If you think 15 touchdowns is great in an era where everybody's throwing at least 25, sure, go for it. Give him the contract. You're going to come to find that that's probably something you want to get out of pretty quickly. And Saquon Barkley, that's kind of its own thing too. I think Saquon does want to be back there, and he is really what drives that Giants offense. So I think it's important for them to get him back, especially if they're going to be giving Daniel Jones the money. I think they might have to franchise him. And that is kind of the reports that I'm hearing for the most part, at least for what little information I'm getting on Giants football. Is that it does seem like that seems to be the direction, although there will be a negotiation taking place. I don't know if you're going to be able to pay them both in the same year. I don't know what their salary cap situation's looking like, but I mean, okay. You got an injury prone running back who made it through most of this year pretty well. And you got a quarterback who you didn't see anything good out of him until this year when you saw okay out of him. I mean, I'd make the argument that I feel like maybe Daniel Jones is somewhere he may or may not be better than Brock Purdy. I'd give it that. I still feel like I might take Gardner Minshew over Daniel Jones. So we get the Giants out of here and the Eagles get to move on. And this one is big because they finally get back to what is the core of what they do well, where they ran the ball well, but they also threw the ball through the air well. And that's what really separates this Eagles team from everybody else in the NFC, with maybe the exception of Dallas. No other teams really had both things. You were either a run first team or a pass first team. The Eagles and the Cowboys are both teams that could do both well. And I guess Minnesota could as well, but Minnesota was, again, they're really fraudy. I wouldn't be shocked if Minnesota misses the playoffs next year either. By the way, while I'm at it, I don't feel that highly about them, even though I think they have a better shot at getting back. I think Detroit's probably going to win that division, but there's obviously uncertainty with Aaron Rodgers and still really a lot of things to move in the NFC. So, I mean, sure, maybe the Giant or maybe the Vikings go from that 12-4 team or 12-5, whatever they were, down to a 9-7-1 team next year and they sneak in. But I don't feel that great about them either. Philly's legit. This is a team that deserves to be here. They obviously got the upgrade with A.J. Brown there as far as receiver goes, which has given Jalen Hurts just the license to go kill. I mean, that dude is launching the ball wherever he feels like it. When it's not A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith is a really good second receiver to have. That dude can play too. So this team's been a lot of fun. You look at them across the board, and I mean, that offensive line, if not the best in football, it's absolutely top three. And then their defensive line. You know, they had four guys that had over 10 sacks this year. I mean, it's incredible. They just got guy after guy. We'll talk about that coming up when we talk about the matchup here. But Philadelphia gets to move on in a very comfortable fashion. Cincinnati at Buffalo. Admittedly, I did miss the first drive of this game. I did miss Cincinnati going up 7-0, but I came in just in time to watch them go downfield and go up 14-0, at which point I said, oh, shit. I'm not sure that this game is going to be, I thought this was going to be Cincinnati's game. And I even thought that Cincinnati was going to score 27, but I thought Buffalo was going to score 24. And that never happened. So I got Cincinnati pretty much dead on what they were going to do. I did not have Buffalo not doing shit. And that part threw me off. There was obviously a lot of talk going into this game about the Bengals offensive line or lack thereof. They held up well. And granted, one thing I will say from Buffalo's perspective is that pass rush, you can see what kind of impact Von Miller makes on that pass rush, because when he is there, that whole team is getting sacks. And a lot of that, and I tell people this all the time, and it seems like nobody believes me. When you have one of those guys as a pass rusher, your whole team gets better at pass rushing, because you have to set so much attention to that Von Miller that now all of a sudden your guys that wouldn't otherwise be getting sacks have routes to get in there and get a sack. Well, Von Miller's not there, and all of a sudden Buffalo doesn't have a pass rush. It's non-existent. So Joe Burrow, with the backup offensive line, was able to sit in the pocket as much as he wanted. And on top of that, they have a very good run game with Mixon and Pirine. They were able to just keep the ball moving whatever way they wanted to, which is ultimately why I thought they'd win this game. I just figured they'd be able to, okay, run it here, throw it here. And just kind of pick apart the Buffalo defense, which they did. The one thing that I did not anticipate was that the Bills weren't going to be able to do somewhat the same. The Bengals don't have a bad defense, don't get me wrong, but it's not an elite defense by any means. I mean, you know, I know everybody right now knows the name Sam Hubbard from his 98-yard fumble touchdown. But, I mean, he's a solid player. He's not great. They got Trey Hendrickson on the other side. He's pretty good. And, they got a linebacker I like too, and I can't think of his name right now, but they've got a good linebacker. Just know that they have a good linebacker. Their secondary, it's fine. I mean, they got some guys over there, but like Eli Apple, for all of his talent, I mean, the guy can totally whiff sometimes and just lose his track of what he's supposed to be doing. Mike Hilton's pretty good. They got guys. It's just nobody on that defense scares me. And I thought, with the defense where nobody scares you, I thought Josh Allen was going to be able to do some Josh Allen shit. I don't know why Josh Allen wasn't really ever running the ball. I don't know what was up with that. Because to me, in a game that's covered in snow, what's a better thing to do than run the ball? And you've been only running the ball exclusively through your quarterback all season. Why all of a sudden am I not watching Josh Allen tear through a defense and run people over like a freight train? It makes no sense to me. So, and when you look at a lot of the play calls that were set up there, a lot of these things were down the field plays, which I didn't really understand because, I mean, I get it when it's third and 10 that you have to get 10 yards, but you would think that when you're throwing it on second and 10 or second and 8, yeah, well, maybe you're trying to set yourself up for a third and 2 instead of, nah, we got to pick up 20 here. Do you? I don't feel like that's how most teams play. And it really didn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. And a lot of these, they were almost, I don't know if this was more so play calling or if this was more so Josh Allen being in a funk, but it seemed like he was just going for things towards the sideline. I never really saw anything over the middle. And I can't say that I attribute that to like great defensive schemery. I don't think that that's the case. I think that this was either offensive ineptitude from a play calling perspective or Josh Allen. And granted, I have not gone back to really make this differential. I didn't get to see, but it seemed to me like every throw was sticking to the sidelines, which that, I mean, that's always a tougher throw to make. So I don't really know what it was that Buffalo was looking to do, but it never worked and they never changed anything. Beer break. So when I look back at that game, I'm just sitting here and I'm kind of scratching my head, wondering what the fuck Buffalo was even looking to do there. Point of it being, Cincinnati does get out of this one with the 27-10 win. And they move on. As I, you know, a lot of people were putting the money on Buffalo, but I didn't hear a lot of experts saying they had Buffalo in this one. So it is kind of funny the way that one worked out. I had Cincinnati here. Granted, I will tell you guys as well, money line for the playoffs so far, I'm 8-2. That's where the fun stops. I'm 3-7 on spreads and I'm 5-5 on over unders. So I'm not going to be the guy you want to go to for playoff spreads. I tell everybody that'll listen to me that every year, listen to me in the regular season. I've got you. Playoff time. No, just leave it alone. But I am doing pretty good in picking who's winning and losing the game. So I went 4-0 this last weekend here. So that was pretty cool. We move over to the final game of the weekend. We had Dallas at San Francisco. San Francisco wins this one 19-12 in what was probably the most fun watch out of the four games. And look, San Francisco had a strategy here because a lot of people want to say, yes, Brock Purdy looked like he was having a hard time moving the ball against the Dallas defense. That was as, I don't even want to use the word bad, but that was as poor of a performance as we have seen from Brock Purdy specifically. And the game plan for San Francisco here was, Brock, don't turn the ball over. Don't make any mistakes. Just keep the ball moving in a positive direction, or let's get a nothing play. Let's bank on Dallas making the mistakes. And it worked. You'll notice, I mean, I'm sure you're going to look and you're just going to see Dak Prescott, two interceptions, go, oh, yep, he made two mistakes. Very important mistakes. Here's what you got to keep in mind. His first interception that he throws gives the Niners the ball already in field goal range. You've given the Niners 3 points. The second interception that he throws, the Cowboys are in field goal range. And granted, I know that the kicker had his own thing going on and you're worried about if he would have even been able to make a kick, but you've now automatically taken points off the board, or at least the chance to. Let's just call it at that. So let's just say, for example, the Dak doesn't throw those two interceptions. Let's even just say that they get a field goal. They're not able to take it in for a touchdown that drive. Well, now all of a sudden we give Dallas 3 and we take away 3 from the Niners. And we're looking at a 16-15 Niners game. And all of a sudden the end of that game might look a little bit different, because where Dallas was driving downfield to try to get a touchdown as quick as they could, well, if they're driving for a field goal, it kind of opens up the playbook a little bit differently. You can do different things, and maybe you don't have to have whatever the fuck that last play of the game was. By the way, I actually think the setup wasn't as bad as people are making it out to be. I mean, yeah, Zeke at center there, probably not the best idea, because as soon as D'Amico Ryan saw that, he's like, yeah, I got something for that. But I thought that moving all the linemen to the outside like they did, I thought that was actually a really creative strategy, in the way where you're obviously trying to get the ball to one of the, because it looked like they brought out additional linemen for that play, and you had fewer guys that were actually able to really move with the ball. However, they were going to have, one way or another, a solid blockade of dudes. And Dallas has good blockers. I mean, make no mistake about it. Dallas's offensive line is a very good offensive line. So you get yourself in a position where you got some guys that can move with the ball, and they got legitimate guys that can block in front of them. You do have an idea for something that might be able to work. The Zeke at center thing, that was probably just dumb. I understand it, but I mean, San Fran had exactly the right play call to take that away. And then once they took that away, because I kind of have a feeling he was supposed to almost immediately be back involved in the play after the throw was made. Then all of a sudden you have to throw it in a different direction. You throw it over the middle. And I mean, I don't even remember who it was that made that tackle, but that was like the best form tackle I've ever seen in football. I mean, the second that it touched the receiver, just feet taken out from under him and he's on the ground. He has no opportunity to do anything with the ball. That was perfect. Perfectly played by San Fran's defense. It couldn't have been done any bit better. And granted, even though I think the idea of the play was good, you're still probably not scoring on it, because it's very rare that you see those kind of plays score. But regardless, I do think without Dak's two interceptions that this game has a lot of a different feel at the end of it, and has a lot of a different opportunity for Dallas at the end of it. I think that Dallas shot themselves in the foot, which was exactly San Francisco's game plan. Let's not shoot ourselves in the foot. They will do it to themselves for us. And that was it. That was the game plan. They were able to execute. I know that everybody loves that Kittle catch. I'll be honest. As a Seahawk fan, I'm not sick of the Niners as a team. I'm really not. But I am kind of sick of Kittle, because I'm sick of Kittle ripping everybody apart year over year. I'm like, God damn it. It's fucking Kittle guy. I got it for him, and I got it for Aaron Donald. Don't quite have it with Bosa yet. I'm not sure why. Maybe it's because he is a little bit more injury prone, so I don't have to see him every time. But for some reason, I don't really have it as much with Bosa. I have it with Kittle. I'm a little bit sick of Kittle as a Seahawk fan, but I think he can understand that. So we move to the matchups that are coming up here. Starts off with San Francisco at Philly. Whew. Philly minus 2.5 in this one. Here's what's up. For one, coolest matchup in this game absolutely is Nick Bosa versus Lane Johnson. Just give me that every time, please. I just want to watch these two men just punch each other in the mouth for 3.5 hours. When we look at, because San Francisco gets all this credit and attribute for how great their pass rush is, Nick Bosa had 18.5 sacks this year. Nobody else on their team had any more than 5. And I think that's the big difference between their pass rush and Philly's pass rush, which as a team, Philly's pass rush was a better pass rush than San Francisco's. Whereas I told you earlier, they got 4 guys on that D-line who had at least 10 sacks. And they had guys that weren't healthy for a large chunk of the season. But I mean, when we start just looking at who the Eagles have on that D-line, they got Josh Sweat. They got Ben Graham. They got Javon Hargrave. They got Ndamukong Suh, Robert Quinn, Linval Joseph. Oh, and Fletcher Cox. They are stacked. They got so many guys on that line. And that's just it. And considering that they have that many of them, that means that you're not seeing the same 4 guys play after play after play. You're getting in a fresh one of these other guys all the time. So one play, you're looking at Josh Sweat, Robert Quinn on the outside. And the next one, you're looking at them blitzing in their linebacker, Riddick, who's made a lot of plays from the pass rushing positions. And then on the other side is Ben Graham. They're fresh. They're ready to rush the passer. It's incredible. And that's what they hit you with. from a linebacker perspective, yeah, they're probably a little bit weaker than, especially than San Francisco, but then even a lot of teams in the league. But they have crafty linebackers who are all speedy, which is a big win. A, you can utilize them for your pass rush too. But they also, they do this thing, and I like this that they do. They sneak in their draft pick, N'Kobe Dean, as just kind of we'll call him like a spell linebacker. He just comes in now and again, gives somebody a break on the play. And it's basically the same as their starting linebackers. You're not really having a drop off there. So again, you just have another fresh body that's just as good as the other ones that comes out there and makes plays for you, because guess what? He wasn't out there for the last three plays. He was just sitting on the sideline. So you throw him into the game real quick, and now you got a fresh middle linebacker. It's really cool what Philly does with their defense. And then additionally, obviously, I mean, you got Darius Slay on the outside, which I know corner was such an issue for Philly a few years back. It's nice to see that they got that settled up and they got Bradbury on the other side there. They've got a good thing going for them. CJ Gardner-Johnson's been a really good safety for them as well. I like a lot of what Philly's defense does, and I like a lot of what it is. It might not have the high-end pass rush that you just faced with Dallas as far as simply having Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence. Outside of that, I mean, yeah, those two guys might be better than any one of Philly's guys, but Philly has like eight guys, and they're always going to be fresh. They're always going to be coming in there, and I think that's actually going to make Brock Purdy's life harder than it just was against Dallas. Additionally, when you look at the other side of the ball here, Jalen Hurts isn't going to do what Dak Prescott did. He's not going to make those mistakes. I don't think that Jalen Hurts has all the upside throwing abilities that Dak Prescott has, but I think he comes with none of the negatives, and I think he makes a lot better decisions, and he keeps showing that he's a better and better passer the more times he drops back. I don't think he's hit his ceiling as far as how good he's going to be as a passer. Obviously, you have a different perspective of the threat of run with Jalen Hurts as well. And if you're sending in massive pass rushes, I mean, Jalen Hurts is one hole away from being able to break that shit for 27 yards. So you get a whole different element. And also, Philadelphia runs the ball differently than Dallas does. Dallas is straight handoff Tony Pollard, straight handoff Ezekiel Elliott. And yeah, you'll get the occasionally a jet sweep with Michael Gallup or CeeDee Lamb. But for the most part, it's a pretty straightforward run game. Philadelphia's, this shit's all RPO. You don't know what they're doing, but they've got options for three different guys to run the ball or a place to throw it. And that's hard to defend. And I don't think that that's actually going to be, I don't think it's going to be what kills the Niners. I think that Philly's defense is probably going to be what kills the Niners, because the Niners won't be able to keep up. I don't think this is going to be by any means a blowout. I think that San Francisco is going to be in this game. I think it's going to go down to the wire. But I think ultimately we're probably looking at somewhere along the lines of like a 23-16 Philly win. And I think that's just going to be because they have a more stabilized offense. They'll be able to move the ball better than Dallas did, even though I don't think that they're going to necessarily open it up. I don't think it's like, oh my God, it's RPO. What do we do? San Francisco's got a great defense. They're still going to be able to hold Philly to not moving the ball a lot, but it's going to be more movement than Dallas was able to do. I think ultimately here, Philly wins this game. And it kind of goes into an interesting part of the offseason for what the Niners would be able to do. And granted, we'll have more opportunity to talk about that after the season does end for the Niners, because look, I mean, if the Niners come out with this one, I'm not going to be incredibly shocked, and I don't want to sit here and talk about the end of the Niners season before it happens. So we'll save that. But I do have some curious questions, what they do at quarterback moving forward. I'm curious to see what they're looking at as far as what they'd be able to do as far as maybe signing one based on, I don't know what the salary cap there looks like, but I know they have a lot of dudes that deserve a lot of money if they're not getting paid it. So I don't know exactly what the construct for San Francisco moving forward is, but I'm interested. Let's keep it at that. Moving over to Cincinnati, Kansas City, time for a little bit of the beer. This one, currently the line is at Kansas City minus one. Started off at Kansas City minus three. It was as far as Cincinnati by 2.5, and it's made its way back to Kansas City by one. Nobody knows exactly which way to go in this game, myself included. I am reluctantly taking Cincinnati in this game, and I'll tell you reluctant because I just told you Patrick Mahomes is my favorite player to watch in the NFL right now. I don't want to watch his season come to an end. I really don't want to watch it come at the hands of the Cincinnati Bengals again, because I know everybody's talking about this 3-0 against the Chiefs thing. Look, I don't think that by any means they're in the Chiefs' head with that. I think that they've played three very good games and they've come out barely on top in all three. And yeah, that's great. And that can give the Bengals all the confidence in the world. I don't take the Bengals because of that at all. I really don't think that has anything to do with this game. I would take it because I know that the high ankle sprain that Patrick Mahomes suffered is typically going to be a 4 to 6 week type injury. And we're asking him 1 week later to come out and play essentially the best football he can play. And I don't think he's going to be able to play the best football that he can play. I think we're still going to see amazing things from Patrick Mahomes. We're going to see things that make you just smile and go, what the fuck was that? I mean, that's what he brings. But ultimately, I think that Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals will be able to figure it out and get it done. They're methodical, man. They're going to be able to utilize what they have. And for anybody that wants to keep doing this with Cincinnati's offensive line, look, they had the second worst offensive line in football last year, and they made it to the Super Bowl. You know, in Joe Burrow's playoff game last year against Tennessee, when they got matched up with the number one seed Tennessee Titans, Tennessee got 11 sacks, 11 on Joe Burrow, and Joe Burrow still walked out of there just fine. I don't think that the pass rush of anybody is really something to worry about as much with Joe Burrow, because he's still just going to be able to, and every time that he can get rid of the ball, he's going to get rid of it to one of those monster receivers he has. I mean, I know everybody keeps doing this right now. For some reason, over the last week, I keep hearing this. T. Higgins would be the number one receiver on any other team. Like, that would also mean that Ja'Marr Chase, the best receiver in the league, and I'm not here to tell you that he's, like, far off from it, but I'm pretty confident that T. Higgins would also be the number two receiver on at least six other teams. So just calm down on maybe the every other team thing. I mean, yeah, T. Higgins probably is a number one wideout, but I mean, I think it's maybe like a lower end number one, maybe not like, you know, Davante Adams number one or even Ja'Marr Chase number one. So not to take a shot at T. Higgins, just something I've noticed. Everybody's been saying that. That's been like the narrative. Oh, well, T. Higgins, he's like the second best receiver in the league just behind Ja'Marr Chase. It's hold up. But this is the best core of three receivers that anybody has in football. Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd. I mean, nobody has that anywhere. There's teams that have two that I think are matching up pretty well. Like, I think in Philadelphia, I think A.J. Brown matches up with Ja'Marr Chase pretty well, and I think that Devontae Smith matches up pretty well to T. Higgins. I'd probably lean T. Higgins by a little bit there, but not by a lot. And then Philly has its drop-off, where Cincinnati has Tyler Boyd. Tyler Boyd's pretty fucking good. So We look at that there. I think that Cincinnati's going to be methodical with this. I think they're going to try to keep their drives just 6 yards at a time, milk the clock, keep Mahomes on the sideline, keep him from getting into a rhythm, but always go down the field and score. And I think they're able to do that. And I don't think Mahomes has the magic right now, his full magic, I should say, to be able to make up for that deficit. Because when he has the ball, he's going to be looking to score too. And even though his game is a lot more methodical this year without having that bomb threat of Tyreek Hill, he still has, and granted, none of these receivers, I'm not even sure if any of these guys are as good as Tyler Boyd, but between Juju Smith-Schuster, Mecole Hardman, Kadarius Toney, Sky Moore, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, like, he's got guys. They're just not the same kind of guys that the Bengals have. But I don't think that Mahomes is going to have a problem keeping this game close. I think he's going to be able to have enough magic to keep him right there. I just think without him at his fullest we're going to miss out on him being able to make that play, that miracle play that I think they're going to need in order to get this win. That would then leave us with a Philadelphia-Cincinnati Super Bowl. Honestly, I'm okay with any version of matchup that comes out of this. Personally, if I get it the way that I want it, it would be Kansas City-Philadelphia. I think that would be a blast. I think Cincinnati-Philly would be pretty cool too. I'd be fine with seeing San Francisco play either of these teams, but I think it would be a little bit of a lesser, from the fun perspective, I think it would be a lesser Super Bowl. Because Jalen Hurts and that Eagles offense is a blast to watch. And I mean, Brock Purdy and the Niners has been cool. It's been a good story. But it's not, I mean, one of these names is not like the other. Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy's been a cool story. We're just going to leave it there with him. And I still don't know exactly what he is. But I'm starting to kind of get a feel for where he is now that I've seen him in some struggles. Oh, okay. So he does this well. He gets a little bit panicked when this happens. Got it. Okay. So I feel like I got a little bit of a better read on him. But going into this championship weekend, I am excited for any potential outcome. This is going to be fun. And I'm excited because even though I go back to work tomorrow, I'm off on Sunday. So this is the last day of my actual vacation. I've had a blast. It's been a very good time. I've enjoyed the hell out of it. I thought I was going to do more episodes for you guys, but like I said, I never actually ended up getting bored at any point. I thought I was gonna, but as it turns out, I still have to play 4 more games in my NBA 2K season to get to the end of my second regular season. So I plan on playing those 4 games today. And that's about it. This is very important, very sports relevant. I have to clean my room. My room's kind of been a mess for a while. I want to clean my room today. So without further ado, until next time, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Nobody is Shiftier.